American Novels. Profound in its revelation and interpretation of human nature, it ranks, said one great critic, among the 15 best novels of the world. NBC's University of the Air brings you Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter, another in our series of books that live. American Novels. The grass plot before the prison on a certain summer morning of the late 17th century was occupied by a large number of the Puritan inhabitants of Boston, all with their eyes intently fastened on the iron-clamped oaken door. But let us bend an ear to a few of the gossips in the multitude.
Good wives, I'll tell you a piece of my mind. It would be greatly for the public good if we women should have the handling of such a transgressor as this Hester Prynne.
Aye, Mary. The magistrates are merciful overmuch. At the very least, they should have put the brand of a hot iron on Hester Prynne's forehead.
The woman has brought shame on us all and ought to die.
Hush now, gossips. The lock is turning in the prison door.
See how she repels the town beadle's hold on her and walks of her own accord.
She carries a babe in her arms.
But the infant does not hide the red letter on her breast.
Look how elaborately she has embroidered it with swirls of gold thread.
Make way, good people. Make way in the king's name. Open the passage, and I promise ye, Mistress Prynne shall be set on yon scaffold, where man, woman, and child may have a sight of her brave apparel from this time till an hour past meridian. A blessing on the righteous colony of Massachusetts, where iniquity is dragged out into the sunshine. Come along, Madam Hester, and show your scarlet letter in the marketplace. Make way.
I pray you, good sir, who is this woman? And wherefore is she here set up to public shame?
You must be a stranger, else you would have heard of Mistress Hester Prynne.
You say truly I am a stranger. Would you please to tell me, therefore, of Hester Prynne's offenses?
Aye. She was the wife of a certain learned man, English by birth, who was minded to cross over and cast his lot with us of the Massachusetts.
Oh?
To this purpose he sent his wife before him, remaining himself to look after some necessary matters. Mary, good sir, in some 2 years or less, no tidings have come of Master Prynne, and his young wife being left to her own misguidance. Well, look you, the babe in her arms.
And who may be the father of yonder babe?
That matter remaineth a riddle. Madam Hester absolutely refuseth to speak.
The learned man should come himself to look into the mystery.
Our magistrates have not put in force the extremity of the law against her, which is death, but in their great mercy have doomed Mistress Prynne for the remainder of her natural life to wear a mark of shame, the scarlet letter A upon her bosom.
A wise sentence. She will be a living sermon against sin. But it irks me that the partner of her iniquity should not stand on the scaffold by her side. But he will be known. He will be known.
The Reverend Wilson has risen on the balcony above the scaffold. See, he's going to speak.
Hearken to me, Hester Prynne. I have striven with my younger brother in the service of God, under whose preaching you have been privileged to sit, that he should try to persuade you to divulge the name of him who tempted you to this grievous fall. Good Master Dimmesdale, the responsibility of this woman's soul lies greatly with you. Will you not change your mind and exhort her to repentance and confession?
Hester Prynne, thou hearest what Reverend Wilson says, and seest the accountability under which I labor. If thou feelest it to be for thy soul's peace, I charge thee to speak out the name of thy fellow sinner and sufferer. Be not silent for any mistaken pity for him. Take heed how thou deniest to him who perchance hath not the courage to grasp it for himself the bitter but wholesome cup that is now presented to thy lips.
Woman, speak out the name, that and thy repentance may avail to take the scarlet letter off thy breast.
Never. It is too deeply branded. You cannot take it off.
Speak, woman. Speak and give your child a father.
I will not speak. My child must seek a heavenly father. She shall never know an earthly one.
It is said that after she returned to prison, Hester Prynne's calm manner gave way to one that was overwrought.
Aye, a sort of physician was called in.
Aye, some elderly stranger who appeared only this morning.
I saw thee in the marketplace today.
I knew thou didst. Drink this potion.
If death be in this cup, I bid thee think again ere I drink it.
Dost thou know me so little, Hester Prynne? If I imagined the scheme of vengeance, what could I do better than to let thee live? Drink. Hester, I ask not how thou hast fallen into the pit. It was my folly and thy weakness. What had I, a man already in decay? What had I to do with beauty and youth like thine? From the moment when we came down the old church steps together, a married pair, I might have beheld that scarlet letter blazing at the end of our path.
Thou knowest I was frank with thee. I felt no love, nor feigned any.
True, true, it was my folly. Between us, the scale hangs fairly balanced. But Hester, the man lives who has wronged us both. Who is he?
That thou shalt never know.
Never, never, sayest thou. Believe me, Hester, I shall seek this man as I've sought truth in books and gold and alchemy. Sooner or later, he will be mine.
Thy words interpret thee as a terror.
One thing I would enjoin upon thee. Thou hast kept the secret of thy paramour. Keep likewise mine. Believe not to any human soul that thou didst ever call me husband. Should thou fail me in this, beware. Dost thou understand?
I will keep the secret.
And now, Mistress Prynne, Roger Chillingworth, as I shall henceforth be known in Boston, leaves you alone.
Look, there goes Hester Prynne across the street with the child, Pearl. How old is the child now?
3 years.
See how the woman keeps her dressed. Like a bird of royal plumage.
Oh, 'tis a shame a woman of her kind should be so gifted with the needle.
Aye, yet fortunate for her, since it is the only way she supports herself and the child.
Oh, look, she's going into Governor Bellingham's mansion.
I understand he ordered a pair of embroidered gloves from her for an important occasion of state.
Is the worshipful Governor Bellingham within?
He hath the Reverend Dimmesdale with him, and also the physician, Mr. Chillingworth.
I will enter and wait.
Very well.
This is very nice of you, gentlemen. I appreciate it very much. It's just very good. Ah, what have we here? Whose child? Oh.
Good morrow, thy worship.
It is well thou hast come, Hester Prynne. The council has been discussing whether we should trust an immortal soul, such as yon child, to the guidance of one who has stumbled and fallen. Were it not better for thy little one that she be taken out of thy charge, and clad soberly, and disciplined strictly, and instructed in the truths of heaven and earth?
God gave her into my keeping, I will not give her up. Reverend Dimmesdale, thou wast my pastor and hadst charge of my soul, and knowest me better than these men. Speak for me.
There is truth in what she says. God gave her the child, and an instinctive knowledge of its nature and requirements, which no other mortal can possess. And moreover, this child was meant for a blessing, the one of her life. It was meant also for a retribution, a pang, a sting, an ever-recurring agony in the midst of a troubled joy. For Hester Prynne's sake, then, and no less for the child, let us leave them, as Providence hath seen fit to place them.
What say you, Mr. Chillingworth? Has he not pleaded well for the poor woman?
Aye, well. And with a strange earnestness.
Oh, have you heard the blessed news?
Aye, the Reverend Dimmesdale, who has so long been in poor health that we fear for his life, has finally consented to take the advice of the physician, Mr. Chillingworth.
And now the learned Mr. Chillingworth is lodged in the same house with the minister.
It was Mr. Chillingworth's own idea.
Aye, and an inspired one.
Tell me where, my kind doctor, did you gather those herbs with such a dark and flabby leaf?
Even in the graveyard, just below the window there.
Huh?
I found them on a grave which bore no tombstone. It may be they grew out of the dead man's heart and typify some hideous secret that was buried with him and which he had done better to confess during his lifetime.
I conceive that the hearts holding such miserable secrets will yield them up at that last day with a joy unutterable.
Then why not reveal them here?
They mostly do. Many a poor soul hath given its confidence to me. And what a relief I have witnessed in them afterward.
Yet some men bury their secrets.
True, there are such men. But it may be they keep silent because they retain a zeal for God's glory and man's welfare, so that they shrink from displaying themselves black, because henceforth no good can be achieved by them.
These men deceive themselves. They fear to take up the shame which rightfully belongs to them.
I want to ask your judgment frankly concerning the condition of my health, good sir.
First, let me ask, as your friend, hath all the operation of this disease been fairly laid open to me?
How else can it be?
You would tell me then that I know all. Be it so. But again, a bodily disease may, after all, be but a symptom of some ailment in the spiritual part. Would you that your physician heal the bodily evil? How may be this, unless you first lay open to him the wound in your soul?
No, not to thee, nor to any earthly physician. If it be the soul's disease, then do I commit myself to the one physician of the soul. But who art thou that meddlest in this matter, that dares thrust himself between a sufferer and his God?
See now how passion takes hold upon this man. As with one passion, so with another. In the hot passion of his heart, he hath done a wild thing ere now, this pious Master Dimmesdale.
Tell me, hast thou been aware that Hester Prynne is not looked upon by the townspeople in the same light as 7 years ago, when she first covered herself with ignominy?
And for good reason. Her charity is boundless. In all seasons of calamity, she takes a needed place.
Aye. Even tonight, she is sitting by the deathbed of Governor Winthrop. Perchance she'll stay long past midnight, if she can be of use.
Come, child. It grows late for you to get him off.
Hester. Hester Prynne.
Yes, it is Hester Prynne. I and my little Pearl.
Oh.
But why art thou on the scaffold?
Come up hither, Hester. And little Pearl. Ye have both been here before, but I was not with you. Come up hither once again, and we will stand all three together. Give me thy hand, Pearl.
Minister?
Yes, child?
Wilt thou stand here with Mother and me tomorrow noontide?
Nay, not so, my little Pearl. I shall indeed stand with thy mother and thee one other day, but not tomorrow.
What other day?
At the great judgment day. But the daylight of this world will not see on me.
Worthy, sir.
Why, Master Chillingworth.
Pious Master Dimmesdale, can this be you? Well, well, indeed. We men of study dream in our waking moments and walk in our sleep. Come, good sir, I pray you let me lead you home.
How did you know I was here?
Verily, I knew nothing of the matter. I had been at the deathbed of the governor. Oh, come with me, I beseech you. Else you will be poorly fit to do the Sabbath duty tomorrow.
Mother, who's that old man yonder pulling up weeds? I have seen him before.
It does not concern me, Pearl. Run down to the margin of the sea and play with the shells until I call thee.
Yes, Mother. I'll make a crown for myself out of the seaweed.
I would speak a word with thee that concerns us much.
Aha! Mistress Hester. I hear good tidings of you on all hands, mistress. Aye. What see you in my face that you look at it so earnestly?
Something that would make me weep if there were any tears bitter enough. But let it pass. It is of a miserable man that I would speak.
And what of the Reverend Dimmesdale?
7 years ago in prison, you extorted a promise of secrecy from me concerning your real identity.
Aye.
As the life and fame of yonder man were in your hands, there seemed no choice to me. Since that day, no man is so near to him as you. And now, since you know his secret, you cause him to die a living death daily. And still, he knows you not. In permitting this, I have acted a false part to the only man to whom it was left me to be true.
What evil have I done this man? That he now breathes and creeps about on earth is owing all to me.
Better had he died at once.
Yea, woman, you say truly. Better had he died at once. Never did mortal suffer what this man has. And all in the sight of his worst enemy.
Hast thou not tortured him enough? Has he not paid thee all?
No, he has but increased the debt.
Then I must reveal your secret. He must discern thee in thy true character. There is no good for him, no good for me, no good for thee in this dark maze.
Woman, thou hadst great elements. I pity thee for the good that has been wasted in thy nature.
And I thee for the hatred that has transformed a wise and just man to a fiend. Wilt thou yet purge it out of thee and be once more a human? I said there could be no good event for any of us in this maze of evil. That is not so. There might be good for thee who has it at thy will to pardon. Wilt thou reject that priceless benefit?
Peace, Hester, peace. It is not granted me to pardon. I have no such power as thou tellest me of. Let the black flower blossom as it may. Now go thy ways and deal as thou wilt with me.
Be it sin or no, I hate the man. I have come many days to this spot in the forest, Arthur Dimmesdale, hoping thy walks might bring me here.
Esther, hast thou found peace?
Hast thou?
None. Nothing but despair.
The people reverence thee.
Which brings only more misery because of its hypocrisy. Had I one friend, or were it my worst enemy, to whom I could daily betake myself and be known as the vilest of all sinners, methinks my soul might keep itself alive thereby.
Such a friend thou hast in me. Thou hast long had such an enemy, and dwellest with him under the same roof.
What sayest thou?
Oh, Arthur, that old man, Roger Chillingworth, he was my husband.
Thy husband? I might have known it. I did know it. Oh, why did I not understand?
Oh, forgive me, forgive me.
I forgive you. May God forgive us both. But, Hester, does Chillingworth know your purpose of revealing his identity to me?
Yes.
Then how am I to live longer, breathing the same air with this deadly enemy? Oh, be thou strong for me, Hester. Advise me what to do.
Is the world so narrow? Does the universe lie within the compass of yonder town? Whither leads yonder forest? Then there is the broad pathway of the sea.
The sea?
Yes. A ship now is in harbor that within 3 days' time will sail to Bristol.
Yes.
It will be a simple matter to secure passage with all the secrecy necessary, although I've crushed under 7 years' weight of misery. But thou shalt leave it all behind thee. There is happiness to be enjoyed. Preach, write, act, do anything save lie down and die.
Oh, Hester. Hester, no. Thou tellest of running a race to a man whose knees are tottering beneath him. There is no strength nor courage left me to venture in the wide world alone.
Thou shalt not go alone.
The people left their work today, Mother. Why have all these people come into the marketplace?
They wait to see the inaugural procession pass. There will be the new governor and magistrates and the ministers and all the great people. There will be music and marching soldiers.
Will the minister be here? And will he hold out both his hands to me and kiss me as he did in the forest yesterday?
He will be here, child. But he will not greet thee today, nor must thou greet him.
Mother, here comes the man who lives on the ship. The man you talked to yesterday afternoon.
Good morrow, Mr. Sprin.
Good morrow, Captain.
I must make the steward get ready one more berth than you bargained for, I learn.
What mean you? Have you another passenger?
Why, know you not another is minded to try my cabin fare with you? Aye, you must have known it, for he tells me he is of your party and a close friend of the gentleman you spoke of will bring him abroad. His name, I believe, is Chillingworth.
Dimmesdale's election sermon was the greatest triumph of his life.
Such eloquence. Oh, look. There goes the holy man in the procession now. He seems hardly alive at this moment. See how he clutches at his heart.
Look, you. Reverend Dimmesdale leaves the procession line.
He walks toward the scaffold against which stands Hester Prynne.
He is ever one to be kind to the most unfortunate.
Hester, come hither. Come, my little pearl.
Madman, hold. Wave back that woman. Cast off this child. I can yet save you. Would you bring infamy on your sacred profession?
Methinks thou art too late, tempter. With God's help, I shall escape thee now. Hester Prynne, come hither. and twine thy strength about me. Support me up on yonder scaffold. So, you come with us, Roger Chillingworth.
Hadst thou sought the whole world over, there was no one place where thou couldst have escaped me, save on this very scaffold.
Then thanks to him who led me here. Hester, is this not better than we dreamed of in the forest?
I know not, I know not.
Let me now do the will, which he hath made plain before my sight. For Hester, I am a dying man. So let me make haste to take my shame upon me. People of New England, ye that have loved and deemed me holy, behold me here, the one sinner of the world. At last I stand upon the spot where 7 years ago I should have stood. Here, with this woman whose arm supports me now. Lo, the scarlet letter which Hester wears. You have shuddered whenever you saw it. But I tell you that with all its mysterious horror, it is but a shadow of what I bear on my own breast. For behold, behold the dreadful witness of it.
The minister tears the band from his breast.
Look, you, a scarlet letter cut into his flesh.
Thou hast escaped me.
Oh. May God forgive thee, for thou too hast deeply sinned. Hester, farewell.
Shall we not meet again? Shall we not spend our immortal lives together?
Hush, Hester. We have sinned. That answer lies with a God who has the power to forgive all. His will be done. Farewell. Farewell.
Arthur.
Hester Prynne? Yes, she came back to us again.
Though she left the town for a good many years.
When Master Chillingworth died the year after the minister, he bequeathed a goodly sum to little Pearl.
And when Hester returned, Pearl was not with her.
But it is rumored she made a happy and wealthy marriage in England.
And though Hester Prynne refused to take off her scarlet letter, she has become a reverenced person in the town. No one will ever know the help she gives to others in distress. The letter on her bosom is now accepted to stand for Angel.
Aye, for Angel.
The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne is one of the best of America's novels, brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Next week, American Novels will present that universal favorite of young and old, Tom Sawyer by Samuel Clemens. And let us remind you again that these and countless other fine books are to be had in your local public library. Many American novels in the 1947 summer series are included in the useful handbook of the world's great novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. The Scarlet Letter was adapted for radio by Agnes Eckert. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berkowitz. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Hester Prynne was played by Geraldine Kay, Arthur Dimmesdale by Larry Alexander, and Roger Chillingworth by Arthur Peterson. The two gossips were played by Hilda Graham and Helen Baymiller. Others were Nanine Bilski, George Kluge, Burr Lee, Charles Mountain, and Duke Watson. This is Hugh Downs. This program came to you from Chicago. It has been a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.